Lectionary Lab Live is recorded by Two Bubbas and a Bible live from Gainesville, Florida and Brasstown, North Carolina. Welcome, everybody, to the Lectionary Lab Live. I'm John Fairless. I'm here with my Bubba, Delmer Chilton. Say hey, Bubba.
Hey, Bubba.
Hey, man. Good to hear from you today. Looking forward to our talk. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
It's 2019, and we are shifting just a little bit after having a great and successful Advent and Christmastide season. We're getting ready for the Epiphany and the season that follows with that. These are the texts for the Epiphany of the Lord, January the 6th, 2019. Tell me what you're thinking about today, Bubba. Sort of set the season for us. Give us some ideas. You know, do what you do, and let's let her roll.
Well, the Epiphany has been observed since about the 4th century, and it's been observed mostly as the with set up beginning. Let's put it this way: with the Magi, the wise men. The first appearance of Christ to the Gentiles, and the emphasis has to do with revealing of Christ to the Gentiles. And so there are about four basic themes that run through both this day, which, you know, the Epiphany is always January 6th. January 6th isn't always a Sunday, so right. they're coinciding this year. So, but the season of Epiphany and the day of Epiphany carry several themes. So I'm going to walk through those and make some references to the text.
Let's do it.
So first one is a theme of light and darkness. First part of Isaiah, the first couple of verses sort of lifts that up. Rise, shine, for your light has come. And then verse 2, for darkness shall cover the earth, thick darkness, etc. So light and darkness is a dialogue there. One of the things we always have to be careful about is remembering, for us, not to pay too much, say, oh, we're in the middle of darkness and now the light is growing in the natural world. I mean, that's a nice analogy, except if you're below the equator, which the opposite is happening. So just be aware of that.
And a good time for us to doff the hat. We have a number of listeners that we would say down under. And yes. To those of you listening in Australia, New Zealand, other southern hemispheres, thank you for tuning in every week.
We appreciate it.
Yeah.
I think I sometimes wonder if you just listen to laugh at our accents, but that's fine. there are people in North America who laugh at our accents, too.
What accent?
What accent, yeah.
Okay.
So you've got light and darkness going on, which is a major theme throughout and through each of the texts. A second theme, which is similar, is the theme of revelation. This is a time in which a real emphasis is on Jesus being revealed as the Christ, the Messiah, the Son of God. One way I phrase it is, we don't discover God. God reveals God's self through the person and work of Jesus. This theme is really picked up a lot in the Ephesians text, verses 3-5, when it talks about mystery was made known by revelation. The understanding the mystery of Christ in former generations, this mystery was not made known. Now it's been made known, etc. So this theme of mystery being revealed, it's not something we discover. It's something that God shows us. And that's a theme to be explored through Epiphany. A third theme is what I call God's preferential option for the poor. Mm-hmm. Sometimes that's an old phrase from my seminary days. This is picked up in Psalm, but it's one of those questions. Jesus came, why did he come? And one of those answers has to do with justice and preferential option for the poor. 72 verses 2 and 4, Psalm 72 verses 2 and 4, judge your people with righteousness, your poor with justice. Talks a bit about He will defend the cause of the poor of the people, give deliverance to the needy. And then 12 through 14 is all about the needy, the poor, pity on the weak and the needy, save the lives of the needy, et cetera, et cetera. Right. So right. That's a major part of the theme of Epiphany, is not just that a new king has come, but a new king has come with a mission. That, and the actions that Jesus takes fulfill this mission.
Right.
As it were. And then the fourth theme working throughout this is one of inclusivity, beginning with Isaiah 63, nations shall come to your light and kings to the brightness of your dawn. This is more than just for Israel. It's for the world. Psalm 72:11, may all the kings fall down before him. Ephesians 3:6, the Gentiles have become fellow heirs. And 8, the grace was given to me to bring to the Gentiles the news of the boundless love of Christ. Mm-hmm. And of course, with Matthew, the what are referred to as wise men from the East. And so this inclusivity is a major theme. So we review those themes, and I would not suggest trying to put them all in one sermon.
We've got several nice choices here.
A plethora, a
veritable buffet of choices here. And just remember what happens when you try to eat everything on the buffet in one trip.
One of the things I'm trying to think about is you've got 7 weeks basically of the Epiphany. And what I really want to say is keep these four themes in mind each mm-hmm. week as you prepare a sermon and see where they come. And they're all here today. There's light versus darkness. There's revelation. Jesus says the revelation. There's God's preferential option for the poor, the justice and righteousness. And there is inclusivity of mm-hmm. the Gentiles and all people. So those four themes are running through. And pick one.
Right. There you go.
Every week, pick one and stay with it. And so if you're going to work with Isaiah, this comes from, and I don't want to get too deeply in 1st, 2nd, and 3rd Isaiah, but this comes from the 3rd Isaiah, but it picks mm-hmm. up themes from 1st Isaiah on light. It's a prophetic voice speaking to Jerusalem. Given that it's 3rd Isaiah, this is from the time after the return from exile, and probably the temple has been rebuilt, but people are looking around and said, this isn't worked out the way we thought it was going to. we're still impoverished, and a lot of these people don't like us. Mm-hmm. You know, we immigrate. They see us as immigrants. We went away. We came back.
Yeah.
Let's be honest.
That temple ain't much to look at.
it's kind of like in the, you walk in some of these churches and you get a confirmation class of 3 or 4, and they'll show you the pictures in the hall when there were 15 kids being confirmed back in the 50s. And,
yeah.
You know, we had this great temple, and this is just, you know, it's like having church in mama's living room, push the couch around and preach off a kitchen stool. I mean, you know, it's not much, and people are getting depressed. And this is saying, okay, God's not done yet. Arise, shine, your light has come. Mm-hmm. Now, one of the interesting images here is theophanies, appearances of God in the Hebrew scriptures, are often associated with light, but it's sudden and bursting light. You've got the burning bush, and you've got Moses going to see God's face, and it's so bright, and a burn, you know, a pillar of fire by night, and chariots of fire, and all of that sort of thing. This is a more subtle image. It's like the dawn.
Yeah, the rising of the sun, yeah.
Rising of the sun. And, you know, I frequently often get up in the dark, particularly this time of the year, and I have this porch with windows in all directions. And one of the things I like to do is sit on this sunroom and drink my coffee and read a little bit. And I gradually back over to the east, it gets red. And then I can look over this way as the sun falls on those mountains over there. And slowly, before I know it, the light is here. That's the image mm-hmm. that Isaiah is using. So the darkness is around, but the light is slowly dawning.
And that's,
arise, shine, God's light is here.
Great opportunity to connect with people. It gives rise to the figure of speech. And then one day it dawned on me that so-and-so was going on. And it is that image of, you know, it was happening and I didn't quite get it. And then it's got a little brighter. And then one day I looked around and it was light. And the answer came and I realized it dawned on me.
Yeah. One of the best literary expressions of that, and I mean literary, not in the fiction sense, but C.S. Lewis, in writing about Surprised by Joy, talking about his conversion, he talks about his gradual movement from atheism to some form of theism to this, that, and the other. And what he said was I remember something along the lines, he went to the zoo or something with his brother, and he was riding in a sidecar in World War One era, post-war era motorcycle. And he said, riding along, I know when I left, got in that sidecar, left to go, I did not believe Jesus was the Son of God. And when I got out at the zoo, I did. But what happened in between, I'm not sure. Yep. Slowly dawned.
It dawned on me.
And suddenly I was aware of something that had already happened. That's kind of the image. Arise, shine. Your light has come, not will come. Yeah. It, the light has come, but you haven't noticed it yet.
Mm.
So that's part of what's going on in Isaiah. And that's that light versus darkness. And oftentimes we think of it more in terms of flipping a switch and a bright light comes on.
Kaboom.
Like the idea bulb in the cartoon, but this is more an image, as you say, of a gradual beginning to understand what's already there. Mm-hmm. Moving to the psalm, this was a coronation prayer, liturgically used as part of the enthronement of the Davidic kings. This was whenever a new king, and they'd go to the temple and do this enthronement, this was a part of a prayer that was done in that context. And so they're praying to God, give the king your justice of God and your righteousness to a king's son. So it's sort of invoking several things about what a king should be.
Mm-hmm.
A king is God's agent of judgment and justice. God's king will be a source of blessing. The God's king must defend the weak and needy because they can't defend themselves. God's king in Israel will have a universal reach. May all the kings fall down before him, nations. And God's king will be God's representative on earth. Now, what's interesting for us reading this Christianly in this Epiphany season is Jesus being revealed as the king in the Davidic line. Since this was the ancient Davidic coronation prayer, what we have to look at is say the Christians, early Christians, looked at Jesus, looked at this psalm, and tied it together.
Right.
What does it mean for Christ to be the king? This is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
This is Jesus being revealed as this person.
Yeah, absolutely.
Throughout Epiphany.
And I, you know, just a chance to comment. For a long time, I've tried to understand and reconcile in my mind this whole business of, quote, Old Testament prophecy, you know, reading. Yeah. And you and I often talk about reading the Hebrew Scriptures Christianly with a Christian eye. I think lately I've begun to say the process you just described. Here's the church initially arising out of the Jewish tradition, you know, they're reading these scriptures. They look at Jesus, they look at the scripture, and they go, huh, well, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, that makes sense, rather than a sort of a trend or something that has always bothered me a little bit, to try to go back and plot in Hebrew scripture, oh, see, well, they said this because they knew that Jesus was going to come and that this piece was going to be fulfilled. And so Isaiah or King David or even Abraham, they knew that Jesus was going to come. And just, I'm going, that's a little dishonest. to me of an adequate reading of the text. But to look back and say, oh, now we know Jesus. Now we've seen Jesus. And look here at what God has been doing. Yeah, that makes sense. We can see a description of Christ here.
And to tie to that, there is, though, some of the roots of that understanding right here in the Ephesians text. And there's some question, and I'm not going to get into it because I'm not qualified. There's some people question whether this is actual Paul or pseudo Paul, you know, whether Paul actually wrote this text. I'm just going to take it as it is, and it starts with I, Paul, so we'll just say Paul wrote this. But right. Nonetheless, on the one hand, it talks about mystery made known to me by revelation. This is a major theme throughout Epiphany, the mystery of Christ made known to him through revelation, and he talks about, you know, he's kind of a trope, an image of a Jew's Jew, as he called himself, you know, and he's going along and then he has, boom, the light, you know, and he realizes that Jesus is the Christ, et cetera, et cetera. So this is this great, and I was revealed to me the mystery of Christ. All that's good. But when you get into the in former generations, this mystery was not made known to humankind, you begin to tie into this kind of thing you were talking about, that this mystery of the Christ, the Word, and it suddenly becomes known. Now, if you push it in the wrong direction, you can say they knew that this person, Jesus, was going to be born in Bethlehem in the year whatever, and da-da-da-da. That's not what Paul is saying. What Paul is saying has to do with what was a mystery, perhaps, but was not a secret. There's a difference between a mystery and a secret.
Yeah.
Because from the very beginning, and then we've mentioned it in Isaiah, we mentioned it in the Psalms, it has been clear that Israel is to be a light to the nations.
Right.
That the Messiah is for the nations, not just for Israel. So the revelation to the Gentiles was not a secret. It was not something that was not known. So what he's talking about has more to do with the mystery of God's love for all, which is a mystery forever. You know, it's a mystery. So as I say, why does God love me? I have no idea.
Yeah, I don't have a clue.
I have trouble loving myself some days. So so that's one theme in here, that remember the difference between a mystery and a secret. Sometimes they're mysterious because we can't clearly understand the motivation of how it unfolds. And the mystery becomes clearer as we live into God's love. Second thing is that this Paul is pushing here is to remind us that Christ is the turning point in the divine drama, the hinge of history, some people talk about. How you look back at what's been going on, and then you look at Christ, and something begins to click about the nature of God's love for the world. That's what he's getting at here. And Fred Craddock had an interesting piece to talk about how this is all about passages, the mystery of the passages. As we pass from dark to light, we pass from the hidden to the known, from the mysterious to the revealed. And so that's like a kind of a pattern that flows through this. We move from darkness to light, from hiddenness to being things being known, from the mysterious to that which is revealed. So those are the themes that he's working on in Ephesians, and underneath all of it is the major case that of a reminder, I think, rather than much of a revelation, a reminder that Christ is for all, not just for Israel.
Right.
And that Christ is always a mystery.
Well,
at another place, Paul talks about this, but we are stewards of the mysteries.
Yeah, that's it. Well, and the point you already touched on somewhat self-deprecatingly, Paul does the same thing right in the midst of this passage. Although I'm the very least of all the saints, this grace has been given to me.
Right.
And all of us, I think sooner or later, have that moment where we need to kind of stop and give it the Laurel and Hardy moment where we scratch the top of the head and go, I don't know, Ollie. I don't know why this has happened.
What was that old country song that Chris Christopherson did? Why me, Lord? What did I ever do? Yeah,
that's worth loving you.
Yeah. So we move from that element of mystery and revelation into the key text for the Sunday of the Epiphany, which is the Matthew 2, 1 through 12. So here's something to notice. They weren't kings.
Right.
They weren't named. There weren't three of them.
Not that we know. There may have been three, but
they may have been three, but it doesn't say there were three.
Yeah.
And they were late.
They didn't show up on Christmas Eve, did they?
Yeah. My wife gave me one of her feminist cartoons, and I don't mind saying that. She's a lifelong feminist. It had these two women talking about it. He said, the virgin birth, I can understand, but where did they find three wise men? this story plays with some interesting images, and one of the important things to do is not to homogenize this story with Luke's story. It's a different story by a different author with different themes. So unlike the typical kind of Christmas pageant, you know, you don't, okay, we got this now. Let's bring on the camels and the kings.
Cue the wise men.
Cue the wise
men. Shepherds, get off the stage.
It's a different story, and it has different themes. And for example, shepherds, wise men, stables, palaces, poverty, wealth, gold, frankincense, and myrrh, angels, dreams, Mary's lullaby and Rachel's wail.
The lament.
We have two separate pieces and versions of the story. It's not like Luke only knew this part and Matthew knew that part. You got to dig a little deeper and say, what is Matthew trying to tell us? And a lot of what he has to do is talking about is this revelation of who Jesus is, that he is Christ is for the world. Luke's message had to do with Christ for the poor and the needy at that point. Matthew's message has to do with for the world. It has to do with Jesus the Christ is Israel's true king. That's that dialogue, you know, with Herod and who's the true king. And it goes back to that Psalm text about the Davidic line. So part of Matthew's message is this is the Messiah is in the true kingship. And a third part of this message is, I think, a very serious foreshadowing of the cross.
Right.
Not so much the crucifixion as the fact that this Jesus, this baby, will be opposed by the political and religious establishment because he's going to turn things upside down.
Yeah.
As the psalm lays out, the Davidic king will turn things upside down and will topple the powerful from the throne, will change the way the world is.
Absolutely.
That's an important message this day. That the message of inclusivity, all God's children, the message of it doesn't matter your ethnicity, the message of God's preferential option for the poor, all of that's in that Matthew text as we walk through that.
That's it. Well, and as it so often does, and you encourage us to think deeply, what is this story? What is Matthew trying to tell us? There are just lots of little goodies embedded in the way the story is constructed, beginning with Matthew noting, oh, yeah, this is King Herod. And when King Herod heard this, sort of purposely setting up the power structure of the day, King Herod, and yet who is the center of the story? This King of the Jews, little k,
yeah.
small k,
yeah.
This king of the Jews, who's the real king here? Where's the real power? And as you're saying, this is it's really going to be a story about subversion of the way we think things work in the world. So you've got the big K, capital king, versus the little king at home. He's just a baby. You've got these magi, which at the time was used, yes, to describe these sort of astrologers, learned people from the court, but was also used a bit disdainfully. You know, yeah, these wise guys, they think they know something. And so you got on the one hand, yeah, these wise guys, and Herod.
Eggheads.
Yeah, Herod's going, yeah, I'll use them for what they're worth, but they're dopes, they're geeks, they're nerds. They don't count for much. And yet it is the true wisdom that they seek. And then you've got this sort of secret agenda on the part of Herod. Yeah, I want to go worship too. Why don't you, look, I want you to find him. Bring that back to me. I want you to come tell me this secret agenda on the part of Herod. You could look at that as sort of a false worship, you know, kind of thing. Versus what we see, these guys arrive on the scene. Number one, they're overjoyed, and they immediately kneel. I love the symbolism there. They kneel. This is obeisance. This is not quite prostrating, perhaps, but kneeling, and there's worship. And then back to your overarching theme, what is the light that guides them here? Yeah. Sometimes we get our drawers all in a wad trying to figure out, well, was there some constellational alignment? Was there a super? Can we find somewhere in the history of the universe where this magic star appeared? When if we just relax and say, well, it certainly was a guiding light, could have been an angel. We have angels described as stars in other places. Whatever, if I let go of having to figure out literally how this could happen, how a star could come and light over a house, you know, my scientific mind says, no, it'd have burned the atmosphere away by that point. You know, you can't have stars popping in. There's a light here, the light for the path, the illumination, and back into all the rich images we've just talked about with dawning and all of those kinds of things. God will show the way.
Somebody asked me one time how I learned to tell a story. And I learned to tell a story by sitting on the porch with my granddaddy.
Listening, yeah.
Reed Anderson Chilton. And one time, after Daddy had bored us both to tears with some episode of Going to Town, and Daddy walked away, I was about 8, Grandpa leaned over and said, your daddy ain't never been able to tell a story. Said, he can't tell the difference between the details and the truth.
Bingo.
Bingo.
Thank you, Grandpa Chilton. That is a good word for us. Preachers, don't get lost in the details. Just tell them the truth.
Amen.
Just tell them the truth. And amen. Well, bye-bye. I've enjoyed it today. And it's good to be back for a new year. And yes, Lectionary Lab is continuing. The podcast will be here pretty much week after week. We're looking forward to Epiphany. Lent will be coming. It'll be Easter. And we'll be along for the ride for all of it. What the heck was I getting ready to say?
Well, I was going to say, it's an interesting Sunday that this coming up, the Epiphany, that John and I are just the most ecumenical people on the planet. Because this Sunday, this Lutheran and this ordained Baptist, now a member of the Methodist Church, will both be preaching and celebrate communion in United Methodist Churches.
Well, there you go. We found a common home.
Yes.
Looking forward to it. Hey, best wishes, everybody. And Bubba, there's not much left for us to do today other than to tell everybody bye.
Everybody bye.
Lectionary Lab Live is a Two Bubbas and a Bible production. Our opening theme is Sally Gooden by Nat Keith and the Bowties. We go out today with Arise, Shine, for Your Light Has Come. This is provided by the Baptist World Alliance Women's Department, and it is their International Day of Prayer theme song.
Sois éclairé, car ta lumière arrive sur toi. Lève-toi, sois éclairé, car ta lumière arrive sur toi.